thank you for watching The Bar. Breaking news, acquisitions, research, and funding. Ryan and I go through different stories that we saw this week, and we kind of bat them around and kind of lay in a little bit of opinions, of analysis, and it's fun. So let's get started. Ryan, the first thing that I would like to talk about, I love when great marketers get new jobs. Julie Knight Ludvigsen, I'm probably not saying her last name totally correctly, but I've known her for a long time because she's been at Unit for Topia, Reflective, Zendesk, SAP, SuccessFactors, Cisco. She's been in the industry for a long time. She's really sophisticated marketer. Culture Amp just brought her on board, and I think that puts the entire engagement space on notice. And I think it's just a wonderful hire. She's a really, really nice person and super, super great at what she does.
All right. So I do not know her, but I wish her well.
Yes, you will.
I think she'll do well.
Yeah, she's done well everywhere she's been, so she'll be fine.
Yeah. All right. So what search engine do you use most to search?
Well,
I'm actually asking you the question.
It's not Ask Jeeves. Okay, so that's out.
That was a good one, though. I'm not gonna lie.
I know, right? I had to bring Alta Vista. I had to bring it back. Google has now become the term. We Google something. We don't search for something. We Google it. We don't Yahoo it or Bing it.
Right.
Even though Microsoft keeps wanting us to Bing things, we don't.
Cold turkey just say, goodbye, Google, hello, Bing?
No. And people have tried, even with like Safari and some other types of things, they've tried to get me to switch to browser. I'm like, dude, this is what they do. This is what they do really well. Like, not changing until something new comes along.
Yeah. So, all right. So first thing I want to talk about is Google.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Obviously, because I'm talking about Google. So they've got a competitor on the market, man. It is Bing. So there's a lot of competitors, right? But I think Google has about 80% ish, right? They got about 80% of the actual search market. But Bing, who's been just getting their wazoo kick forever, right? They're back. They're here. And here's what's happening. So OpenAI receives a ton of support financially from Microsoft.
Right.
They're almost like brother and sister at this point, right? But it's almost like it's at this point they are becoming Bing, right? And so what was interesting, there's a lot of articles and features on this. The war for talent, right? So we make jokes about this in recruiting. We talk about it all the time. It's the war for talent.
Yep.
This is actually going to be or is already a war for talent between these two companies. So so these hires happened back in, I think it was October, November. It was November, November of 23. But now it's becoming a thing in 24. And Bing is now going to be releasing some things, right? It's backed by OpenAI and it's got all this stuff. But anyway, they made two big hires that I wanted to bring up, and I'm going to take a look here. So Todd Underwood. Todd Underwood created and led the ML site reliability team at Google, and Richard Ho, who was one of the leaders in the chip engineering, both have been brought over too.
Smart.
Right. And so this is going back and forth now. So it's interesting for me because it's not directly, right? This isn't a talent acquisition thing, right?
Yeah.
But I think this is interesting to follow the hiring or the stealing of talent back and forth between these two.
Well, this is what you do when you want to jump start your innovation. You can jump start in a lot of different ways. Like when Amazon really wanted to figure out distribution, they hired Walmart's distribution team.
Right.
Right. And you see a lot of people going back and forth between SAP and Oracle and Workday, et cetera. They go back and forth. But what those folks are doing is they're basically saying, we have a problem in this particular area. We'd like to be more innovative in this particular area. We could do it a lot of different. We could fund it, or we could just go hire a gal or a guy to then come in and kind of get us up to speed with where they are. There's a really interesting kind of ethical and moral and even legal part of that that we probably won't touch on during this barf, but you know, again, what can they actually say and not say when they're in that new job is really
Right.
also kind of interesting. But I like it. I mean, first of all, competition's good. If Google wants to be our default browser, which they do, then they're going to have to earn that
No.
trust. They've done it for years, but that doesn't, just because you've done it for years doesn't mean
You got to
you're
keep going.
guaranteed. That's right. You got to keep innovating.
Yeah, so key so fun fact. You mentioned Amazon. When Amazon wanted to build essentially what is the, if not the largest, one of the largest logistics companies in the world at this point, I was with Conexa at the time when they were doing that. And we were working with them to essentially hire what you call just drivers, couriers, essentially, to run that operation. And that just failed miserably. Not just for Conexa, but I mean, it failed miserably for Amazon, right? They still actually use a model of that today. But you're right. They brought in a team or people from Walmart who already had this in place. And but it's just fun fact because that was
And they
in
did the same thing
for
with
a time.
DHL and FedEx and a bunch of other players. I mean, again, it's they're still going to build their own bit, Amazon in this case, and so will Microsoft. It's not like they're going to just
Yeah.
go and cut and copy what Google did. They're going to try to improve what Google did. I
Right.
mean, that's the real juice, is to take some of that talent and bring it over and say, okay, make us better than what you were doing at previous go. Not, I mean, we don't want to just be like Google. We want to be better than Google. And I think Bing is going to, any competitor in that situation is going to not just be as good, they're going to have to prove that they're better for us to trust them. And that's okay. They'll do it. They'll get there. They're Microsoft. You know, don't bet against them, turns out. All right. Article that I ran across, antagonistic AI, which automatically got my juices flowing a little bit, because I'm like, all right, this is cool. Most AI models are moral models. So that's like when I wrote my obituary using ChatGPT, it was good. And then I wanted to write it with Richard Pryor's voice. And it wouldn't do it because it's like, no, that's talking about death. We can't make fun of death. Where with this article is, that's arxiv.org. And what it really talks about is building large language models and building AI to actually antagonize us. So ask us questions that we don't want to answer. Argue with us. Tell us the baby's ugly. It's a cool way to think of helping us with the hard things in life. And so, you know, you want AI to be able to answer your questions, like, okay, done. And you want to be able to it for it to do things for you. But there's a hole in that, when do you need to be kind of slapped across the forehead and go like, hey, that's a dumb idea, or something that then prompts you to then think differently about something. So I really like the idea, and it's just that it's nascent phase, because most of the AI that's built out there is, again, it's moral on some level or another. So I think just kind of keeping an eye out for that to see where some of these models take us and also push us into some uncomfortable places.
Yep. So you mentioned baby. You said baby somewhere in there. And so,
Baby's ugly.
you know, I'm not having another baby, but I do have a story about babies and
However,
kids.
yes.
However, I got some story. Upwards. You ever hear of Upwards? The company
Of
Upwards. It
course,
was We Care, WEE Care, right? So they just raised Series B, 21 million Series B to scale childcare. And so I saw this the other day and I thought to myself, okay, that's awesome, right? Kudos for them. But then I've really got thinking, why, like, what's going on with this? Like, why is this big, right? In the space. And so, you know, as I started to think more about it, I just thought about, you know, our own situation when we had younger ones growing up and, you know, and finding childcare, being able to afford childcare, all of the above, right? Like, it's ridiculously expensive. So anyhow, that's what these guys do. They match families with affordable childcare. They provide that as a service, obviously, through the tech, right? The employers provide it as a service, right? But what I really found, which I didn't know they did, which I really found interesting here, is that they have emergency daycare. So backups. So your child care provider backs out for the day, or whatever that is, or your school's closed. They work with you to go and find a backup in your local area, right? So they handle this for the company. And I just thought it was such an amazing thing. So I want to read some of these. I wanted to read some of these stats off here because I didn't realize this, and I'm sure a lot of other people don't. More than half of working parents, so the specific number is 58%. So 58%, more than half of working parents were forced to leave their jobs in 2022 because they didn't have or couldn't find affordable childcare that made sense for them to work. You could find childcare, but it wasn't affordable enough because it cost more than you were making, right? So childcare issues cost employers more than $23 billion annually due to loss of productivity and employee turnover. They call it absenteeism because I couldn't come in today.
Right.
Because I had to pick up my kid.
Productivity issue.
I didn't realize it was that had that much of an effect on the employer.
Well, think about the employee experience as well. I mean, let's get past the productivity. Productivity is pretty easy to solve that algebra because the more a person works, especially as more zoned in they are to work, the more productive they are, the more you kind of get what you pay for and maybe even more than you pay for, et cetera. But if you think about the experience, the employee experience, like why would I work at this place over another place?
Right.
I think that brought all the way out into recruiting. I think it's a nice way to just say, hey, we care. We get it. You have kids. We've got kids. Everybody's got kids. All right, here's the deal. You know, there's going to be the occasion that your normal care just doesn't show up, can't show up, et cetera. Life happens. We've got a provider that this is what they do. As a candidate, I'm listening. As an employee, that's potentially a reason to stay.
Yeah.
All right. I found this article on HRExecutive.com, and I found it interesting because the title, Layoffs That Are Virtual Go Viral, What to Do and How to Manage. So it just got me thinking about, okay, the idea of layoffs aren't going to, I mean, we're going to continue to have layoffs. Layoffs happen. That's just part of life. But because people are remote, in different countries otherwise, because people are remote, we can't contain the story like we could in a building. And so it really kind of gets you to rethink, okay, letting people go, and you have to do it virtually, so over Zoom or something like that. So how do you do that? And do it in such a way that there it's humane, and there's no reason for that person, legitimate reason for that person to create something that would go viral. So it forces the rethink that up in the air approach, the George Clooney movie, and just think about layoffs differently than we did before. You know, and we did riffs before. You know, there's this process. And, you know, legal's involved, et cetera. And so that's kind of straightforward. But you're laying off someone in Great Britain. They're 6 hours ahead of you. And you have a Zoom call. They're on Twitter.
Yeah.
They're on TikTok. Or they're videotaping. I mean, that was the one I watched, actually. Was a woman was being let go. And she videotaped the entire experience. I don't understand why you're not giving me the answers to why, and all of it is on video. I'm like, oh, this is a nightmare. So for the audience, just think about the way that we do layoffs. I mean, first of all, even if it wasn't virtual, how can we be more humane in human resources? How can we be more humane in when there's this transition? Because to say that the transitions will never happen, that's just not life. There's going to be times when people get laid off, but how can we do it in a better way and maybe take some of the sting out of it, etc. So that's at hrexecutive.com. Yeah, go ahead.
How do you do that? How do you if you're letting go of 400 people and you're remote company, how do you do that?
I think the thing is you take for me, you take the shock out of it, and you take the next steps out of it for them. Be like you again, it's going to come as a shock, but it doesn't have to come as a shock. And so some of this is actually some pre-planning where you communicate, hey, things are really difficult for us right now. We are going to have a round of really, really difficult decisions coming up, like communicating it well in advance. 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 weeks, okay, the week of. That way it's like if you're one of those 400 people, yes, it's unfortunate, but it's not like you didn't know. It's the you so you take the surprise element out of it. Secondly, I think everything has been thought of in terms of their next steps. Listen, here's what we're doing with in terms of offboarding. Okay, we're not worried about your key. We're not worried about your login and all that stuff. We've got all that stuff covered. We care more about you updating your LinkedIn profile and you working with one of our resume consultants and one of our recruiters to then get you placed. And it's like in divorce, not divorce, but what I hear of it, the faster that a person, one of the spouses gets married, is the easier the transition of divorce. Meaning, if you get divorced and your wife gets married 2 years later, that's 2 years of pure hell. But then after that, not as much, because
Because
she's on
you've
to.
moved on.
That's the same thing with employees. The faster you can, as a company, get them to their next thing, their next greatest opportunity, it's not with you, but it's with someone else. Then their happiness goes up, and they're less vengeful, and there's less negativity around you, because they're on to their next. They're next on to their next greatest adventure. They're not thinking about you at that point. And companies don't think about that. They don't plan for that. They just, we got to lay off 400 employees. All right, let's get a Zoom call. And it's like
Bang.
shock and awe, and there's no real thought process to like, okay, by the way, here are all the 19 things that we're going to do to make sure you land softly.
And there's plenty of software behind that that can handle
100%.
that in this space. All right,
100%.
so HireRight. We all know
Yeah.
HireRight. These guys have they've just hit the
A little bit.
Powerball. A little bit. Some could say that it was needed. They weren't doing wonderful. Others will say it's fantastic, but they've been acquired, right? So hire I just called it Hireball. HireRight has been hired acquired, sorry, for $1.65 billion. That's with a B.
That's a B.
1.65 billion. That's big. So they announced that today. That they've entered into a definitive agreement to be acquired by the investment fund, General Atlantic and Stone Point Capital. These are the two that were previously with, and they've I think it was back in November, December timeframe when they first when it first came out,
Right.
but it was non-binding. Now it's official. And so, number one, I didn't realize they were this big. 30 save 37,000 customers
Oh
globally.
yeah. Oh yeah, they were one of the first.
I guess I just never realized how big they actually were.
Oh yeah.
That's
Well,
pretty big.
and getting back to some of the things we've seen both in some of our bars before, they've never really had great marketing. No offense to anyone that's worked there in marketing,
Well,
but
it's background checking. It wasn't sexy until recently.
100%. Now, so that everyone, first of all, don't bet against General Atlantic as a PE firm. There's that. Two, that's for 75 percent of their shares. So the actual money that is still they still they're still 25% still owned by in the public market, if you will. What I like about the play outside of the acquisition, just being a great acquisition, is SaaS players over the last couple of years have become SaaS plays. These background screening plays have become SaaS plays. When you and I were in that game, they were kind of one and done. You hired him to do the pre-employment background check, and then you
100%.
didn't ever have to talk to him again. But because all of them have gotten into monitoring and employee monitorings, they've gotten into the enterprise, they become true SaaS players, which means their revenue is predictable. It's MRR and ARR, et cetera. So what I don't know, and what I couldn't kind of discern from kind of the reading was, is this a cash flow play? Are the funding agents just kind of, they're just going to just, they're just going to, they're just, they're, they bought the cash flow. Are they going to take them private, and clean up the debt like what Kronos did? They basically, Ceridian did the same thing. They took them private, cleaned up the debt, kind of refreshed the brand, refreshed the tech, and then took them public again. So I can't tell, and not on the inside, of course. So I don't know if this is just a, we're going to hold it and it just spits off a ton of cash. Great. Everybody wins. Or are they going to, is there a different strategy they're not going to tell us.
No,
I
we'll
mean,
find
one,
out. I'm sorry.
if they delist, yes. Okay. Then we, clear indicator, they delist. We know what they're going to do. We know that model. But I love the, first of all, I love the acquisition, and I would not bet against General Atlantic.
And I love the space. The space has just been, I mean, the last couple of years has been ridiculous. And I mean, I don't know if that's a COVID thing, post-COVID thing, but it's really been on the rise, and it's no longer just a background check company. Like they've got, but like we'll talk. We can jump into Fama, right? With their recent announcement on their TikTok play, right? Like just now, they're not running background checks on TikTok, of course, but they are monitoring. They're monitoring social, right? They're mitigating that risk. I mean, it's everywhere. They're doing, and kudos to Fama for kicking that out. I'm curious to see how that. I haven't seen it yet. I know we will. So excited
No,
for that.
well, it's social listening and social screening has been around for a little while, but this is taking it to a different level and a different medium, because again, it's all about mitigating risk. If you've got somebody on TikTok, let's use that as the for example, and they're just blasting brands after one after another, Verizon this and AT&T that and Macy's this, like they're just, that's their bit on TikTok. I'm going to bash brands. I had a bad experience. I'm going to tell the world. That might not be a great, that might not make for a great employee. I mean, I'm not saying it
Turns
would or
out.
wouldn't, but you should know. I think that's the argument for social listening and social screening, is that you should know whether or not you make that and that becomes a part of your decision tree or not. You should at least know that these things are happening.
Well, and I think that's where things get a little murky there. At what point is Big Brother watching? Is it too much? And
Hopefully a lot. I hope a lot.
I think it's just the world. And we were just having this conversation yesterday on a different show. I mean, it's just part of life at this point, right? Like the recorders are there. Like
You can
everything you do,
opt out. You can opt out.
you
I
can
mean,
opt out. Yeah.
Ted Kaczynski style, you could just go get a shack in the mountains and get off the grid and not have a driver's license and not pay taxes,
I
right?
don't mind
And that's
being
cool.
monitored.
I want better ads. I'm like on the other end. Like, I want you to really know me so well that you don't put dumb shit in front of me. Like, so I don't need a, on my Instagram feed, I don't need tampon ads. I'm good. I'm solid there. Don't need that. If that means that you're listening to every conversation I'm having, fantastic. I'm not doing anything that would be worthy of like the FBI or the CIA or any of that type of stuff. So why would I care? I just want my ads to be better, more targeted. That's my thing. On the acquisition front, the last one I think that we have on the list today is Hibob acquiring a payroll automation platform, Pinto. And so Hibob, so for everyone, Hibob, wonderful company. Hibob is the name of the company. Bob is the name of the product. And their acquisition deepens their payroll capabilities. And I fully expect more from Hibob in terms of acquisitions. I just think they're a wonderful company and they've just got a lot of momentum. And I could just see them making, going on an acquisition spree. And we wake up one day and They're a global payroll provider, and they're competing with all kinds of the folks that we know and love. But pay attention to this payroll, this acquisition in Pinto, because Pinto already had a good brand, and they bought a company with good tech. I would say great tech and a great brand, and adding it to Bob, I think is just really, really smart play for them. Good work.
Yeah, and you know, and so Pinto's not a, it's not a massive company. Not a massive company, and so curious to see, and we'll see this soon enough, how they're going to bring it in. Is this going to be standalone? Are they going to just offer it to their customers, or however it's going to work? We're going to see that pretty soon. And you know, you mentioned their name, Bob. Mm-hmm. I think it was last fall that I learned that for the first time after all of these years. I've called it Hi Bob.
Yeah, which is the company name.
It's just Bob.
The company name, the company name is Hi Bob.
Yeah,
that's the LLC and the C Corp or whatever, and the product is Bob.
Yeah,
and I think I talked to the marketer actually.
I learned that. I was just like, well then, okay.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Yeah. Alrighty, I got another one if you're ready.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because you're a part of Gen X, Ryan, and I know you're proud to be a Gen Xer.
Let's define Gen X, the ages, because I think yesterday I was called a Zennial.
Yeah, is that really a thing? Not sure. Anyhow, so here's the title. Here's the title they got me. Gen Xers expected to keep working longer than they planned, and will be the first generation to go into retirement with less financial security than their parents and grandparents. So we have something to look forward to.
I agree with that.
We're going to work longer, and when we get into retirement, we're going to have less stability. And that's at Fortune, Fortune Magazine, Fortune.com. You can find that. It's Gen X working longer. Now, for me, what's fascinating, for sort of just the title alone, it's like, okay, you're going to work longer, and, oh, by the way, you're going to go into retirement with less. Oh, okay. Good news. Great to hear. Good news. However, from a work perspective, the working longer part got me to think about how a couple of years ago we talked about how do we work with aging boomers? Mm. Do we work with a part-time? How do we transition some of that knowledge, et cetera? So I think it's actually a nice thing to think about in HR and even in training and development is, okay, we need to be thinking about Gen X in the same way. They're going to be around a lot longer. You know, for Gen Z and for millennials, they're going to wish we were gone. Check.
Yeah.
However, turns out our circumstances are so horrible, we're going to be around a lot longer. Not only do you have to get used to that, but maybe figure out how to leverage that as a talent machine.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You listen to these gurus, I'll call them, right, online. And they say you're 45. You've got 40 years left. And what are you talking about?
Like, I know.
Like, are you already mind? Like,
I barely have 4 weeks. No.
Like, come on. Clearly, yeah. I mean, you know, but then I look at. I mean, I don't think we are going to be better off than our parents were, and I think that's becoming pretty evident now.
Yes.
As we're getting older. Right. I mean, I'm 45, right? I've got plenty of time left, but I would say, I mean, I was expecting 20 years of work left, and I look at it now and I'm like, you probably got 30 to 35 years of work.
Now see, so my bit has been for years, I'll never retire. I'm going to die like at my computer, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to die.
Yeah.
What we used to call die in the fields. That was the bit we said, you're just going to die in the field. I haven't changed any of that mentality. I just think that, you know, first of all, because of my own personal life, I've seen people age so fast when they stop working.
Yeah,
it's just like the clock speeds up for their death. And it's
what else are you going to do? You've been working for 40 years.
I like to work. So, why would I take that away from myself? Like, I actually enjoy. But I think for the talent leaders out there, I think the thing is start thinking, start planting the seeds with your team. I'm like, all right, They're going to be around a lot longer. We can't kick them out. They've got nowhere else to go. How do we leverage this? This is a leverageable moment. It's actually, from a talent perspective, it means you're going to have access to this experienced talent for a lot longer than you normally would have. So it's a good thing from that perspective if you think of it in advance and you start programmatically building things to leverage that generation.
Right.
I got another one if you're ready.
Let's do it. What do you got?
All right, here's leaders. This is quotes. Sorry, I'll do air quotes. Leaders evaluate generative AI, but few use it. So this is fantastic.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense, but y'all got to go look at this research report. It's at russellreynolds.com, and it's what are leaders actually doing about generative AI. Anyhow, I looked at it, and it's, first of all, a great report. A lot of really, really, really great stats in there. And, you know, followed in the folder of do as I say and not as I do. But I think what I really got out of the report was I think generative AI is really intimidating to most leaders, if not all leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And so this where to start, how do I use it, where do I find out more, I think the gap between the hype and usage could grow even further if we don't train leaders on all things AI, but generative AI in particular. So I think there's a training for those that care about training and development, learning and development, et cetera. I think that there's a wonderful opportunity to start thinking about, okay, we can just expect them to use it. Like we did this with social years ago when CEOs and leadership really wasn't in social. You saw this movement, a lot of training, internal training, external training on how to use Facebook, how to use LinkedIn, how to use Twitter, how to do this. And some of it, was just as bad as it sounds like as I said it. However, it lowered the barrier to then for people to access it and go, oh, okay, I get it.
Right.
All right, I'll use it this way. But I get what you're saying, and I get the importance of it. And I think we're going to have to do that with AI.
I would love to be a fly on the wall in some of these conversations. We're part of some of them, of course, but I really want to understand what leaders are thinking about when they're talking about this. The conversation we were having yesterday, was it yesterday? No, a couple days ago, on Gen AI. And it was, this isn't, we're not talking about writing a blog posting,
right?
We're not talking about saying, write me a LinkedIn posting or an article or something.
Right.
We're talking about like building and automating and running your HR function, right? Scaling your HR function in a way that's obviously effective, cost efficient, creates a good experience, like all of these things, right? Like it's upskilling and reskilling and all this stuff. Is involved. It's a real conversation, and it's some of the I mean the leaders are lost, and they should be. It's relatively new in our space. That said, they need to get on it.
Right.
They need to get on it, and there's plenty of I mean the big companies. We're talking Oracle, SAP. All the they're there. They got it right. Like they're already doing this stuff. They can just work with them. You're going to get a sales pitch, of course, but they're also going to be a partner too. They can be very resourceful for you. They have very smart people that are building these work applications.
I think it's, thinking about it is because AI is moving so fast. Generative AI is moving so fast. They just announced videos being produced by generative AI and things like that. Like, okay, it's just you blink and there's something new that's happening in generative AI. I totally get it.
Yeah.
So, it's even faster than social when social first kind of came about. Like, okay, you could talk to somebody about, okay, here's how to leverage Twitter. And that learn, if you will, would last a year, maybe 2 years. You could kind of do the same things. Okay, make sure that you do this and don't do that, blah, blah, blah. With generative AI, Moore's Law, it's like you blink and the next week you've got to be able to think about generative AI in a different way. And so, again, expecting leaders, we're really talking about leaders in this particular instance, but we could easily be talking about employees and all that. But they're going to need our support. They're going to need us to then be able to say, okay, here's what's going on with innovative things in Gen AI once a week. Once a week, getting some type of thing that basically says, this is how we should be thinking about this now, not as opposed to, 6 weeks ago or even
Right.
2 months ago, whatever. Like, this is something new. Okay, how do we adapt this and how do we use this and how do we leverage this, et cetera. So, great report. I mean,
Okay.
there's tons of nuggets in there. It's just that's the thing that got me was like, okay, they're interested, but they're not using.
They don't know how to use it yet.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think that's all
I
we
got
got
it.
today. You have another
Oh,
one?
no. But wait, there's
You
more.
are just a bucket of knowledge, and here I thought
No, no, no.
I
No,
was
no.
gonna, yeah.
No, no. No.
Can't watch
All right, I got
football today because football's over, so.
over. No, that's, I'm sorry. All right, so I got three things. One is ran across a report from Deloitte, and most of the things that come out of Deloitte are really good, especially when it deals with human capital things. So it was, how do you thrive in a boundless world? I'm like, huh, I don't know how I thrive in a boundless world. So it's a report called the 2024 Global Human Capital Trends Research Report,
Okay.
and it's at Deloitte's website, so you can find it there. It's free. You don't have to log in. You don't have to do any of that stuff. It's chock full. It's 122 pages.
Oof.
So, like a bathroom read, or really, just kind of like over the weekend when you got some spare time. But I'll tell you what, it's got really, really cool nuggets in it. So, and generally speaking, things that Deloitte do, they do really,
Pretty
really
good.
well. So, take a look at it. Second thing, I got some funding stuff that I wanted to kind of go through. There's a firm in the UK called MyVitae, called Curriculum Vitae. They raised 1.8 to advance diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. And that's at Tech Funding News, if you want to kind of read more about that. What it really made me think of is the divisiveness now of the word diversity. It like this is such a nice word. It has no cruel intentions whatsoever, but it's become like in COVID how mask became polarizing. If you
Right.
wore a mask, you were this. If you didn't wear a mask, you were
You were
this,
that there.
right? Diversity has become, for me, and this is just William speaking. That was a third person reference, yes.
It was.
So,
It was.
the thing is like the word diversity has now become like a mask. You're either for it or against it, in the sense of, you think you could take a position that, is it diversity of thought? Is it diversity of this? If it's, we're just talking about diversity of race and gender, pfft. And then you've got a whole other line of thought that's like there's so many different ways to think about diversity. What I've personally kind of come to in this cultural war, because I think that's what it is, really. It's like abortion, like some of the, same-sex marriage, et cetera. I think diversity is one of these things. It's a culture war. I've actually just pulled away from the word diversity and moved to inclusion. And the reason I've done that personally is because I don't think there's a counter argument to inclusion. Not that there's a good counter argument to diversity. It's just, it's become polarizing. So I think that, I mean, you can see that it's being attacked at schools. It's being attacked in workplaces. People are being sued that have DEI programs. Like, it's just, that's going to continue.
And
But if you think, yeah, go ahead.
they do mean different things. Yes.
Oh, yeah, of course they do. What distinct
I think people
different
have taken
things.
and I think people have taken understand, I should say, inclusive more. It's a word that they're more comfortable with, maybe.
You can't argue against it. You can't
Yeah.
create a credible argument and say, we should include everyone. Like, that's just, there's no way to kind of come back. Now, if you say diversity, it's like, hey, affirmative action's been around for 60 years, and you know what? It doesn't work. And whether or not you're right or wrong in that argument doesn't matter. You've already got people that are polarized by it.
Right.
Whereas if you say inclusive, you're still going to, you can get equity, equality, belonging, and diversity. You can get those things,
All of that
and I think
fits, yeah.
you can get there. I just think we need to use a different word, or think about potentially using a different word to get to some of the same outcomes. Because if not, we're going to get tied up in this culture
Right.
war of diversity and what's diversity and who gets to decide what diversity is and blah, blah, blah. And
Yep.
I think a way to avoid that is just like, eh, you know what? Diversity is important. Inclusion is more important. Now, if true, make an argument against inclusion. I want to see someone make a credible, people will have dumb arguments, but I mean, a credible argument against why we shouldn't be inclusive. Good luck. All right, last thing I got on my list, right, is I ran across this thing on Crunchbase. So it's crunchbase.com. Job market, startups, self-employed gig worker tools. So the title of this was Startups Roll Out More Services for Growing Ranks of Self-Employed and Gig Workers. The article is cool, but then it lists like in the article, it lists this graphic of 10 companies, how much money they've raised, and what part of the market that they're changing as it relates, and in this case, as it relates to gig workers. And so if you're thinking about your talent portfolio, you're thinking about kind of how you look at gig and the gig economy, you're thinking about, okay, I mean, I looked at that list, Ryan. I didn't know a single firm on that list. And that's just 10 that they pulled out.
And these are
I didn't know.
gig companies hiring gig workers.
These are companies that know do the gig technology.
They do the gig technology. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
And so it's like I didn't know any of them. They're not at HR Tech. They're not at so and so. Like, I didn't know any of them. So go to, it's at news.crunchbase.com, but just you can find them by putting in gig work, self-employed gig workers. I think you should be able to find them that way. But cool thing, again, gig workers not going away. The technology to make that work for the enterprise,
They're
I
here.
think is yeah. I think it's here, and it looks like there's a ton of investment in that space.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for today,
Have we
right?
barfed? We barfed. We
I
did it.
think we got a plenty in. Yeah. You had more than me this week. So I need to read more, I think is what we're talking about here. But listen,
I'm not even gonna touch that, man. I'm not
if
gonna
you're
do that.
still here, you're still watching. Thank you all so much. Make sure you like, subscribe anywhere you listen to the podcast. Of course, here as well on YouTube. We'll see you next time.